Breadbox Media programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Hello and welcome again to Catholic Answers Focus. I am Cy Kellett, your host. What is wrong with the Catholic Church? With all this corruption, can the faith still be trusted? And why has so little been done to correct course? These are among the questions that everyday Catholics and many outside the church, both allies and enemies, are asking. Clearly, something has gone terribly wrong, but part of what may well be hindering a recovery is a failure to agree on exactly who or what is responsible for all this. Our guest today has had a front row seat throughout the years of crisis, Philip F. Lawler is editor of Catholic World News, the first English language Catholic news service operating on the internet, which he founded in 1995. He's also the program director of the Center for the Restoration of Christian Culture at Thomas More College in New Hampshire. Mr. Lawler has served as director of studies for the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank based in Washington, as founder and president of a national organization of Catholic laity, and as editor of Crisis Magazine. In 1986, he became the first layman to edit the Pilot, the Boston Archdiocesan newspaper, and from 1993 to 2005, he was editor of the international monthly magazine A Catholic World Report. His latest book is The Smoke of Satan, How Corrupt and Cowardly Bishops Betrayed Christ, His Church, and the Faithful, and What Can Be Done About It. That really is a front row seat for the crisis. Philip Lawler, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So you put the blame for all of this mess squarely on the shoulders of bishops.
Well, there's plenty of blame to go around. But the bishops are the leaders of the church, and it is in their responsibility, it's their duty to be teachers and guides and, to govern. And governance is really what's conspicuously lacking here.
Fair enough. And how far back do you trace this problem, this kind of crisis in governance, then?
It's probably this kind of problem, I suspect, arises off and on throughout the history of the church in different guises. You see, during the Reformation, the tremendous problem with the sale of indulgence and other forms of financial corruption. I think in our era, we have... By the way, we do have some financial corruption, but overwhelmingly the problem has been sexual corruption. And it's whenever this sort of thing arises, it takes a movement for reform in the church in order to uproot it. And that's what we're facing now. I think that this is both a crisis and an opportunity. It's a tremendous crisis on the scale of the Reformation, I think, that era. But I think it could produce a flowering, a new renaissance of authentic Catholic faith, much as we saw in the post-Reformation era.
It's striking, however, that if you kind of take a broad view of the last century or so, as the sexual revolution has progressed around the world, the primary voice against the sexual revolution has been the Catholic Church. And then we're kind of, I don't know, parodied or mocked as regressive, as sexually repressed, all of that. And that's the very spot where a crisis hits. What do you make of that?
It's very hard for me to overlook the fact that this was the most devastating thing that could happen to the Catholic Church as a teaching institution.
Right.
Since the Church has so much to say to society, and our society is so completely at sea when it comes to issues of human sexuality. And the Catholic Church is the only institution that's holding the line. And I find it hard to resist the conclusion that this is diabolical, that Satan knows what he's doing and attack the church in this particular way at this particular time. And if you think about it, there's nothing that could have been more damaging, more devastating to the church, to the magisterium, than what has happened.
And so, but you also point to this, I suppose, an idea of a panic, not panic maybe, but an aversion, a strong aversion on the part of the bishops to do anything divisive, which kind of created a culture of denial. Can you explain that?
Sure. That's really the fundamental message of this book, The Smoke of Satan, is I'm trying to make the argument that this didn't happen in a vacuum, that church leaders for the past several decades, for really all of my adult life, have been strongly disinclined to state difficult truths, to be confrontational when confrontation is necessary. And in our society, confrontation is often necessary because our society is so misguided in so many ways. And church leaders have developed a habit of ignoring major problems, whether they're problems in society or problems in the church, of pretending that all is well when all very clearly is not well, when we're having a crisis of the faith, a terrible decline in mass attendance and religious vocations. And too often we have heard bishops giving statements that suggest all is well, that, you know, everything is beautiful, rather than confronting the problems and telling hard truths and making rough decisions, and the sort of thing that effective leadership really requires.
And it's, so we need better bishops. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yes. Well, we need better bishops. We need bishops who understand better what their responsibility is. And part of the problem of getting better bishops is that bishops are recruited, you know, tomorrow's bishops are recruited by today's bishops or formed by today's bishops. So it takes a reform, it takes a change of heart. At some point, the bishops that we have, at least some of them, have to take a leadership role, have to be break with the, you know, the sort of peaceful fraternity, and recognize the need for what might be a painful reform.
So as a lay Catholic then, like, what can I do? Like, how can I, if what we need are better bishops, and we need bishops to break with this kind of, it's not a conspiracy of denial, but it's certainly a habit of denial. So what does an ordinary lay Catholic do to help the cause?
Well, the first thing you do is you pray a lot. You pray for your bishops, and you pray for unity in the church, and you pray for courage in church leaders, and you pray for, I'm a great believer in praying for individual by name, your bishop, bishops with whom you're in contact, and all those who have been hurt by the, not just by the sex abuse problem, but by the uncertainty and the scandal in the church, those who've lost their faith. There's quite a bit to pray for. And there is, since this is primarily a spiritual battle, I can't emphasize that enough.
Yeah, okay.
The prayer is the first thing you do. And then on the practical level, I think that all lay Catholics should be demanding of their pastors, and by that I mean your pastor in your parish and your bishop, make it known, make it very clear, and by the way, not just that, but leaders of Catholic institutions, Catholic hospitals, Catholic schools, Catholic colleges, make it clear that that we are not going to accept the easy way out that we've taken for so long, that we're not going to be satisfied with routine pronouncements that ignore major problems, and that we're not going to be satisfied with statements of church teaching that fudge the crucial points and that dodge the crucial distinctions. Make that known and support the causes for reform, support pastors and bishops, give them very strong indications of support when they do the right thing, and when they don't do the right thing, make it equally clear in a polite way but a demanding way that we really need more from them, that we expect more from them.
So,
and that we're hurt by their negligence.
Indeed. But then comes the problem of naming the problem, I suppose. And this, it does seem like there's been intentional obfuscation from many directions. There's not always the goodwill needed to say, okay, what is the problem? Let's get a firm grasp on it and move. But there's also just these, you know, sexual abuse and sexual acting out are by their nature confusing because they're hidden acts that are, it's hard to know who to believe and all that. So can you name the problem?
Actually, I think that the sex abuse scandal has given us an opportunity to name the problem in a way that was more difficult before. And I guess that, too, is something that I'm trying to get across in this book, that we're now presented with an opportunity for lay people to be involved because we can name the problem of sexual abuse. It's a complicated problem, certainly, but we can say, look, we want the truth. Whatever it is, we want it. Get it out.
Yes.
We know that it will be painful. We've already had enough pain, and we're ready to take all our medicine right now rather than have this dribble out for another decade or two and have the church disgraced and throughout the world for another generation. Let's get it all out. And in the process, we're going to find out a good deal about who did and who didn't take responsibility in leadership roles in the church. And when that's exposed, then I think the mandate for reform becomes really pretty clear.
So I know you don't mention, and I wonder if you think this, because there seems to be this a real hard point of debate where people will say we have a sex abuse crisis and others will say, no, indeed, the sex abuse crisis is part. I mean, that's certainly part of what's happening. But we have really a crisis of priests not taking their vows seriously and particularly of a kind of homosexual, I don't know, or they say mafia, but I don't want to use that term, but, you know, section or segment within the priesthood. What do you make of that?
That's fact. There, if we get adequate exposure, if we get the truth, if we ferret out what's happened with the sex abuse scandal, there's no doubt in my mind that what we're going to find is an informal network of homosexual clerics who are promoting each other and covering for each other. And that's why there are so many incidents where someone who was obviously engaged in gross sexual misconduct was not disciplined because he had friends in high places, whether they're in the chancery or, as we've learned recently, maybe all the way up to the Vatican. And once we've exposed that, there's no question that loyal Catholics will be revolted. And I don't want to say we'll revolt, but we'll demand change.
Two maybe challenges to that point, if I may. One, what about the fact that the laity ourselves have not, in general, accepted the church's sexual teachings? We're contracepting, we're engaging in sex outside of marriage, we're divorcing and remarrying, we're looking very much just like the world in that regard. Maybe we don't want too much attention drawn to this because strong bishops will challenge us.
You make a very good point, and that's one of the greatest obstacles to reform, that a priest, a pastor who is bold, who's courageous, who's forthright in teaching what the church teaches, will get an awful lot of criticism and hostility from parishioners who are not willing to accept what the church teaches. And that's a fact that we who want reform in the church really have to deal with. One way I think we have to deal with it is to make sure that when a priest gives a really bold sermon, that he gets positive feedback, because you know he'll get negative feedback as well. You know that he will be seen and perhaps labeled as divisive, as a troublemaker. We have to make sure that we're giving him all the support that we have, both moral and emotional, and by the way, perhaps financial as well. target your contributions to those pastors, those institutions who are doing the most. But you're making a very good point. This is one of the obstacles to reform that we as a group, the Catholic laity in the United States, have made our peace with the sexual revolution, and so we're not in a very strong position to complain if priests are suing for peace as well, and that's another aspect of the reform to take, that has to take place. I'd only say this, that the people who are going to be doing the reform, the loyal Catholics, are the ones who have not made their peace with the sexual revolution, who are following the church teaching. And Pope Benedict made the point that maybe in the future we'll be a smaller church, but if so, we'll be more effective as the creative minority.
The other, I imagine you probably get this charge, but you do hear this all the time. It's kind of a cudgel, the idea that, look, this is just your homophobia coming out. You're lighten up on the all this talk about a gay, cabal or something. It's homophobic.
Yeah, well, the term homophobic is just a word that people use to characterize other people whose views they don't like. So I'm not really willing to argue that point. But here's what I will say, that it happens, in fact, that the sex abuse problem has overwhelmingly involved priests who chase young men. Now, if the same priests were chasing young women, I would not say it's okay. The problem is the failure of chastity and the sacrilege and the obvious violation of their priestly vows and their commitment, which betrays a lack of faith, a lack of commitment. So it's the fact that it's homosexual activity, to me, isn't crucial. The fact is that it's immoral activity and that it's being condoned.
And how far up the chain does it go, this condoning of the immoral activity? I mean, the Pope Francis has spoken about kind of a gay lobby. I think he's actually used that term in the Vatican. What's your sense of that?
Pope Francis did use that term very early on, and he made somewhat a similar point very early on after he was elected. He said something about a gay lobby, and he said the problem isn't that they're gay, the problem is that they're a lobby.
Yeah.
And I tend to agree, although if they were a lobby in favor of Gregorian chant, that would be a different thing.
Yes, right.
But a lobby in favor of any immoral activity is obviously a huge problem, and we've seen far too much evidence that there is some sort of network, however informal, at the Vatican as well. And there, too, there's the need for reform and the need to get the truth out stretches all the way up to Rome. We're not going to regain the credibility of the Church, and lay people are not going to be confident unless there is a real clearing of the air and a cleansing of the stables.
Does that mean a reevaluation of all the recent popes? I mean, does that mean some reevaluation of Francis himself, of Benedict, and of Saint Pope John Paul II?
Well, let me put it this way. Some people are complaining that this whole call for reform is just motivated by people who don't like Pope Francis. And that's nonsense. I have been writing and saying pretty much the same thing about the sex abuse scandal since 1992. And if you are saying that mistakes occurred under Pope John Paul II or under Pope Benedict, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Again, I want the truth. I don't want to play favorites here. I want this truth of what went wrong. Pope John Paul II did not have a great record on sexual abuse, and there are reasons for that. I understand that he had seen too many good priests smeared by communists with that kind of accusation. Pope Benedict did begin a thorough effort to root it out, what he called the filth in the church, but I would say that he was too often willing to do it very quietly rather than to explain what was going on. And that, too, is a little bit of a cover-up. So, yeah, there's some reevaluation. I'm not condemning any of these popes. I think that I have enormous admiration and love for both John Paul II and Benedict XVI, but I don't think they were without blame here.
Fair enough. And it does feel like I sense it in you, but also in the wider church. And I wonder if you sense the same thing, an emotional kind of something has been crossed this year where people are like, just get the truth out. I don't want to defend or disparage anyone's reputation. Just get the truth out. I don't care where it leads. If it leads to the top, fine. If it leads this way or that way, fine. Are you feeling that?
No question. Absolutely. I was on this case back in 2002 when the sex abuse scandal exploded in the United States, and the emotional level among loyal Catholics is so much greater this year, so much greater. And there's also another crucial difference that in 2002, the media was having a field day with the scandal. And loyal Catholics were, I think, reluctant to believe all that they were hearing.
Yes, right.
That's now flipped. The secular media are not terribly interested in the story this time around. They're interested, but not nearly so interested. It's not pounding daily headlines.
Right.
Whereas loyal Catholics are extremely emotional about it. In fact, as I suggested earlier, I think the people who are most demanding, most insistent on the need for reform are those who are most in love with the faith.
So maybe we've, they talk about rock bottom and all that. I don't know if that's a real thing, but it kind of feels like there was still some falseness maybe left in us, and it's getting beaten out of us this year a little bit.
Yeah, it might be. I often make the analogy of recognizing a disease.
Yeah.
And if you have cancer, finding out that you have cancer is not a good thing. But it's better than allowing the cancer to spread.
Right.
At least you know what you have to fight. Or, you know, a problem like alcoholism, when you recognize that you have the problem, that's when at least you have the potential to solve the problem.
Indeed. Philip Lawler is our guest. The Smoke of Satan: How Corrupt and Cowardly Bishops Betrayed Christ, His Church, and the Faithful, and What Can Be Done About It is the title of his latest book. You can get that from Tan Books. Philip Lawler, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about all of this with us.
Thank you for having me on.
And thank you to all of our listeners of Catholic Answers Focus. We're happy you join us each week. Maybe share the fact that Catholic Answers Focus is out there with a friend or two. Tell them that they can sign up for Radio Club at CatholicAnswersLive.com, and then they'll know when a new Focus is out and what's coming on Focus. We'll see you next time.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.